The usual queue has formed. Maguire, Kane, Stones, now they break. And it's headed firmly in! Harry Maguire got his head to it! If one Harry doesn't get you, the other one will! A memorable first international goal for Harry Maguire!
Welcome, welcome to the Three Beards World Cup podcast. I am your host, Tom Miller, and I am here with City James of Manchester City fandom. James, we have gotten through the quarterfinals, and it's still the best World Cup ever.
It's been pretty awesome. These games have all been super intense. Lots of drama, lots of intrigue. I couldn't have asked for anything more.
Yeah, I mean, all the matches have gone down to the wire for the most part, and even if they haven't, they've been excellent performances, with the exception of a few early blowouts like the Russia match, etc. But 19 goals scored in stoppage time, James, in this tournament.
I didn't know that. That's a lot.
Yeah,
it seems 19. Like a lot.
It's 37 scored after the 80th minute.
I don't know what could be causing that statistic. It seems like that's a lot of goals to just have it be happening. I wonder if teams are getting worn down, if there's heat issues. I know some of the stadiums are in the southern parts of Russia, getting a little bit toasty.
They're not that hot, though. I mean, most of the other tournaments that have been played have been hotter. I mean, Brazil was hotter. U.S. in 1994 was absurd.
True.
That was over 100 for a lot of the games, 100 degrees Fahrenheit. So
how's Qatar going to be?
Well, they're playing it in November, right? I don't know if that'll make a difference or not, but they're also supposed to be misting, like the stadiums are supposed to mist all the time or something like that. I don't know. It sounds like a terrible idea.
They're
weeping. Been a terrible idea.
The stadiums are weeping.
It's been a terrible idea, but a great World Cup so far. You brought up another good World Cup, the 2002 World Cup, where you had South Korea in the semifinals, the U.S. in the quarterfinals. Mm-hmm. And according to The Economist, as they try to break down all the romance out of sport, what were they saying about it?
They said that has been what had like 8 out of the top 10 most unpredictable World Cup moments since 1998, when The Economist started. Really following the game.
Thanks for trying to kill everything, Economist. But this World Cup's been amazing. I feel like a large majority of the goals have been nice, and there's been a bunch of own goals to offset that. But, you know, it's still been a terrific tournament.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, own goals in every round, right?
Every single round. All right, so let's get going with the matches here, James. In this one, we have Belgium 2, Brazil 1. Red Devils knock the Brazilians out of the World Cup here. And you have to say, going into this match, the amount of, I guess, negativity built up around Neymar was pretty astounding, considering how good of a tournament he really has had when he's not on the ground.
He's had a pretty good tournament, but I don't agree. I think a lot of that stuff is warranted, like the videos.
Oh, I agree.
There was like a soccer camp where they were training their kids how to be like Neymar, and they would dribble 10 feet out and then just start rolling on the ground for the rest of the time. I thought that was pretty funny.
It was really funny.
But that's a part of his game too. And that's the bad part. That's the bad side of his game right mm-hmm. now. And in addition to that, I think at times he can be seriously selfish. And, you know, that's not always a bad thing. You know, Cristiano Ronaldo can be selfish. Messi at times can be selfish. But usually they're being selfish because they're about to slam home a goal. We see Neymar being selfish and it not leading to anything like that. So he's either got to step up his end result, or he's got to decide that sometimes he needs to pass the ball, which, you know, say what you want about Jesus's tournament so far. Not hasn't been the greatest, but there were several opportunities for Neymar to basically slip in Jesus over the course of his tournament for one-on-one with the keeper, and he just didn't do it. So I think his decision-making, he probably feels, you know, like he's trying to carry this team. And I think that's how they set the team up, too, so I don't blame them for that. But I think that probably led to some of the issues that Brazil ran into in this tournament.
Yeah, I mean, I would agree with that. A lot of it, especially with his style, and he does have a selfish streak in him. In some of the matches, you know, you could tell they were just trying to feed him for a goal, and he could have laid other people off. But still, that being said, going into this match against Belgium, Neymar had the most shots. But he also had the most shots on target, which I think is actually pretty impressive. and he had created the most goal-scoring chances for his teammates, which I did not expect, with 16.
I didn't expect that at all either,
yeah,
no.
I wonder how much of that is set pieces, though, because Brazil's had a ton of set pieces, and he's whipping balls in, so yeah, I don't know how much of that. And he had suffered the most fouls, which is, I mean, you could say one way or the other with that one, right?
He was getting fouled, no question. It's the embellishment, I think, that doesn't help his case at all.
Going into this match, I was actually surprised because it seemed like not just in the U.S., but all over the world, the conversation was, is Neymar bad for the game? Like, that was the conversation going on with a player who's considered in the top five in the world.
It's kind of crazy because there have been, like, Ronaldo used to dive all the time and he used to roll around and stuff like that. But it was never, like, a global crisis that had to be called out. You know,
maybe
this World Cup is getting a lot more attention than some other ones have, coupled with Neymar doing a lot more rolling around than people probably normally used to seeing. I mean, there have always been players that dive. Nani, Cristiano Ronaldo. Usually they play on Manchester United at some point.
I was going to say, are there any players that don't play for United?
Wayne not that I know of.
Ashley Young, Wayne Rooney.
Yeah, these are... Just, I don't know, they have something in common. Anyway, you know, that's but funny. they don't get global hate on the level that Neymar and like ridiculed on. And maybe it's a facet of social media being what it is today, the machine that it is. I mean, but you're just seeing it everywhere.
Yeah, and he's a player that has to worry about his global brand because a lot of these players now are so big and so worldwide that they don't need teams to really get sponsorships and money. Like Cristiano Ronaldo, the amount of money he makes off of his like Instagram account is ridiculous. He has like 100 million followers.
He's up there with Kim Kardashian.
Yeah, I mean, he's through the roof with that stuff. So his image matters a lot. And I'm not saying that's what changed Ronaldo. I mean, he still goes down rather easily. But the rolling is not a part of his game so much anymore. But Neymar, I mean, I think he's actually done his brand a ton of damage in this match. But we've spent enough time talking about the negative part of the match. It was an excellent match. Coming into this, Belgium lining up in the way that we told them to, James.
Mm-hmm.
Kevin De Bruyne out of defensive midfielder. They brought in Fellaini, which I actually would have chosen Dembele over Fellaini, but it's fine. And De Bruyne played underneath Lukaku with Hazard more out on the left and buzzing around. But, I mean, you definitely felt that Hazard had the ball a little bit less because of where De Bruyne was playing and how centrally he was to the game plan. But at the same time, like, Hazard can be on and off. He was okay in this one, but he wasn't dynamic, and De Bruyne was amazing.
I think it was a really positive change for Belgium, and I think they needed to make this change against Brazil because they knew Brazil was going to come out swinging. But, I mean, Hazard not always being on the ball is not the worst thing, you know? He is intelligent enough to make those runs.
Mm-hmm.
Get in behind defenses, and then you have De Bruyne playing him in a perfect pass, you know?
Yeah.
Or Fellaini headbutting somebody and the loose ball bouncing to Hazard. It all works out well.
Absolutely. Like I said, I would have taken Dembele there. On the other side, Brazil had Casemiro out. Marcelo returns to the lineup. But Casemiro in this one, do you think it made a big difference? Because I think Paulinho and Fernandinho are pretty good.
They're good, but I think they play differently. Casemiro was, I think, central to this team because he just stayed back and played defense. You saw Paulinho was almost playing as like a second striker in this game. he was ahead of Jesus for a lot of the time. He was standing on the penalty spot.
Yeah, he made some deep runs for sure.
And Fernandinho is a different type of player than Casemiro too. I actually think their best lineup probably would have been Casemiro and Fernandinho instead of Paulinho in there. Fernandinho is going to roam around a little bit more.
Mm-hmm.
Play passes, run into the box, but he's always going to be bustling about in front of the defense there. So
yeah,
it was an interesting setup.
Yeah, so Brazil in this one looking pretty much the same minus that change and then bringing Marcelo on. And before the match, I would have said that Brazil was slightly favored only because Belgium doesn't have a lot of experience in their team in going deep into tournaments. But I thought that was overcome by a combination of Lukaku's dynamic number nine play. I mean, he wasn't dribbling around people by any means, but he looked cool, calm, and collected. De Bruyne playing in the position he's supposed to be in. And finally, Vincent Kompany looked like he was born to play in a quarterfinal.
He stepped up for sure. You know, it's never a question if Kompany is going to be good enough to play in any game. It's, mm-hmm. Is he fit? you know, I think everyone was a little concerned, or at least Belgium fans were concerned when he went down kind of early with, I think he had a calf injury again. But it seems like he's come back from it, and he's last game he played well, and this game he was just commanding. He just was everywhere he needed to be, shutting down attacks and distributing the ball out of the back.
Yeah, he was phenomenal in this game, especially against a very speedy attack, and you wonder how much of that has to do with him playing day in and day out against Gabriel Jesus. But I mean, on the other side of that, you could say that Fernandinho plays against De Bruyne all the time, and mm-hmm. I thought that, you know, he was outplayed by KDB by a wide margin in this one. But let's get into the actual match here. So 13th minute corner kick, and there's a theme in this corner kick, James, that was almost universal. It was almost KDB to Kompany to Jesus to Fernandinho into the goal for an own goal. Almost. But as you said, KDB didn't actually take the corner. It was just three City players in a row on altering teams, yeah. And the ball ends up in the net.
KDB does take some of their corners. So when I first saw the goal, I thought it had to come from him, but this one didn't. It skimmed off of Vincent Kompany's peanut head, yeah. Which made Jesus whiff on it, which caused the unsighted Fernandinho to shoulder it past Alisson, who is in net instead of the City goalkeeper, Ederson. So that's where I think the City players conspired to discredit Alisson. It should have been Ederson starting the whole time. You wouldn't have this problem.
Yeah, Ederson probably would have saved it because he would have known that Fernandinho would have been shouldering the ball backwards.
Because he plays with them all the time. That's the kind of familiarity. That's why you have club team players playing on the same national team. That's the benefit you get.
Absolutely. In this one, an early own goal. Augie shows up again here. Commanding performance from Augie in this World Cup, as we said before.
Probably GOAT. He's going for GOAT status.
He is. You got to get to 13. I think he's at 11.
Unlike Messi and Ronaldo, he doesn't have any issues scoring in the knockout rounds.
No, he does not. 13th goal, and that kind of set things on edge a little bit, but Belgium started to take control mainly through De Bruyne after that, and it was due to him that they scored, obviously. He gets a counterattack, is dribbling hard towards the opposing goal, the Brazilian goal, and Marcelo, I think, doesn't know that Kevin De Bruyne has one of the cleanest long shots in the game and plays the pass a little more than he should have, doesn't block the shot, and it's just it's like a 24-yarder that Kevin De Bruyne probably hits in sleep.
And that never got more than 2 feet off the ground.
Just belted.
And just ripped it. Beautiful. It was amazing.
Yeah, I would have to say in this one, you know, we were having conversations in our EPL podcast about who the third best player in the world is and whether or not it would be Neymar after this tournament, because I think that the World Cup, this will allow the third best World Cup, third best Ballon d'Or player to be picked. It'll be based on this. And Salah was in the conversation. KDB was in the conversation. Mm-hmm. Neymar's in the conversation. And I had always said that it was KDB, and, you know, I think he has to beat them out now, right?
Yeah, well, now that Martinez, I think, is letting him do what he does, you can see the quality shining through, and this definitely helps his chances. You know, I think there's always going to be a bias towards goal scorers.
Yeah.
Not that KDB can't score goals, which we saw in this game, mm-hmm. But much more of a looking for a killer final pass than a killer shot. He'll take the shot when he has to. When you force him to, he'll take the shot. But yeah, I think this is going to solidify that placement for him. I agree with you.
I think so. Harry Kane might have something to say about that at some point, James, because if they win the World Cup, then you probably have to say that it'd be Harry Kane. We'll see what happens, though. There's still a lot of, still a few games to be played and some things to be let out. But at this point, Belgium's up 2-0, and, I mean, Kevin De Bruyne absolutely deserves this goal. Brazil looks shell-shocked, a theme that we've seen from the big boys in this tournament. They make a sub at halftime as Willian, so effective in the previous match, was pretty ineffective in this one. They brought on Firmino, and you and I argued a little bit of City Manchester United arguing, but I thought that Gabriel Jesus could go down as the worst striker in Brazilian World Cup history. I actually did some research on it. I went back to 1950 and looked at the rosters to see if there were any other starting forwards who didn't score in a World Cup, and there were none, James Lewis. All of the number nines scored if they played at least two matches.
Your statistics say that, and I'm not going to argue against it. I disagree with you, just because the way this team was set up, and I think they fixed it in the second half when they brought Firmino on and moved Jesus out to the wing. Mm-hmm. But this, their tactic this entire tournament has been funnel the ball to Neymar. Jesus is not playing on the at the defensive line trying to poach an attack. He's dropping in the midfield. He's playing a false nine. He's passing out to the wing. He's passing to Neymar. He's passing to Neymar. He's passing to Neymar, and not getting a pass back from Neymar. He definitely had some opportunities where he could have scored. He definitely did not have an overwhelming amount of opportunities that he just messed up.
Yeah, he only had six shots in the whole tournament in, I think, five matches. So
his instructions were not to shoot on sight. He was definitely looking for to bring other players into the game. So statistics-wise, goals scored-wise, yeah, he might be the worst in terms of goals scored, but I don't think they were actually asking him to go out there and score goals.
Yeah, I don't know. I think that being on the end of the Brazilian attack with a team that is so attacking-oriented, although this is not as attacking-oriented a team as we've seen Brazil play, definitely with a little more onus on defense, with two defensive midfielders sitting in front of a back four. So that was a little more defensive than usual. At the same time, I think as a number nine for a big nation, he should have a goal. He only had six shots, and that is a little more towards your argument of their attack funneling through Neymar, which it definitely did.
He's not going out there to take shots. He's going out there to be a playmaker. So you almost should look at him more as compare him more to attacking midfield stats. Still, I think he should have scored a goal, but I don't think it was the focus. I think when they switched him out to the wing and had Firmino up top, if they had been playing that way throughout the tournament, I think he has goals.
Yeah, I wonder how much of that this match, his ineffectiveness, had to do with how well organized the back three for Belgium were, led by Kompany, knowing his movement, etc. I'm just saying, I don't know if that really played a big role, but it seemed like he didn't get the ball. There were no through balls. He just didn't get any opportunities at all, and he was subbed off in the 58th minute for Costa, who brings a more Willian approach from the wing, where you're just an extremely successful dribbler. And in this one, you saw that defense led by Kompany. Courtois had a terrific save late, which is unfortunate because he's been so obnoxious in the news lately. He didn't really need to get his head any bigger, but a terrific save in the 93rd minute. Brazil does get a goal in the 76th minute before that save's required. Renato Augusto comes on, takes a shot, scores a goal. I mean, there's not really much to say to that. But at the same time, you felt like Belgium had a hold of this match even after the 93rd minute when Neymar bent that ball in. And once Courtois made that save, I thought this game is over.
Yeah, absolutely. I think Kompany having the game that he did just made it that much harder for Brazil, who haven't been firing on all cylinders.
They were on and off. I thought the machine was rolling a little more, but the only thing that was rolling was Neymar, and I wonder how much of a distraction that really ended up being. You know, there's so much negativity around him, and he came out as such an embarrassment to soccer across the board, like you said. And I wonder if that had any role in how the team played. You don't know.
What I thought was interesting was that it seemed like in the second half of this game, he got angry.
Yeah, he was getting chippy.
But instead of rolling around all the time, he was popping up and like running and getting the ball back more and fighting harder. It's like, okay, so obviously I think it got to him.
Yeah, you have to wonder that. Pete made a great point as we end this conversation on the Belgium-Brazil game. The point he made was that he really was enjoying watching Brazil play for the most part in this tournament, which is not something he had said really in the past. You know, he said there's always some sideshows with guys, rolling around, or everybody remembers Rivaldo getting hit in the shin guard on a corner kick and then going down holding his face. One of the most famous dives in history. And, for that reason, a lot of people will not root for Brazil because of players like that. And in this one, they the rest of their team, Casemiro, Fernandinho, those kind of defensive midfielders, it was a different type of squad. And Brazil was, and Neymar was just a distraction for that squad. But as the tournament went on, and then especially as this game went on and Brazil needed time back, all of a sudden, Neymar's popping up after every single hit.
Right.
Not rolling around. So
Yep. You
can understand how that would turn people off. And in this age of social media and repeated video exposure, I'm wondering what kind of damage he's done to his brand. But overall, this game was excellent. That all aside, 2-1 Belgium. Belgium on the hard side of the bracket, doing work. And they will face a France team that won 2-0 over Uruguay in a match that I thought was going to be a little grittier than it ended up being, but you have to give France all the credit in this one as they go through.
I think missing Cavani just killed any kind of attacking pressure that Uruguay had. And as a result, I mean, France just had so much more of the ball. I think they had 62% possession. Uruguay's pass accuracy was only 63%,
yeah,
which tells me we already knew that they didn't have a great creative midfield, I think, but the outlet for so many of their passes was Cavani and Suarez working hard up top, I think, and enabling their play. And with just having Suarez up there, I mean, he's not the same explosive player that he was before. He's getting a little older. He's still, I mean, he's an amazing player, but it's a lot easier to mark one world-class player than it is to mark two world-class players, one of whom is a 6'2 Adonis who runs about the entire game. So,
yeah, it was unfortunate in this match, and I think it made all the difference, honestly. Suarez did not have a shot on target in this match.
No, that's not surprising.
Which is telling. I mean, he was just too isolated. The match is pretty cagey, as you would expect, but France always looked like they were going to get the edge here, and Varane flicks a beautiful header in on a free kick. Mm-hmm. Just a terrific flick into the bottom corner that left Muslera with no chance, really. And at that point, it seemed like France had what it took to beat a Uruguay side that almost seemed like it had his hand tied behind its back.
It's almost like they didn't come to play in this game. And that free kick, you know, Griezmann did a little stutter step in his run-up to that one. And if that was planned, that's genius level. And it looks like it was, because Varane like, did a little move like he was going to run towards the goal, attack the goal, and then he stepped back and curled back around the backside, and just this perfectly placed cross landed on his head, and he flicked it in. It was pretty special.
Yeah, well, Alexi Lalas keeps saying, James, set pieces, what does he set say? Pieces, set pieces.
Does he say,
that's say that? That's what he says. He says they're important in soccer. That's what he says.
I just completely tune him out. I don't hear anything he says. So
there's some really famous free kicks in World Cup history, which is pretty awesome considering how many matches are played, how many amazing free kicks have come out of World Cup play. The Toni Kroos one, of course, is up there. But also there's a famous Swedish free kick. I believe it was in 1994, where the attackers were standing about 6 yards away from the 18. The wall was just behind the 18, and the attacker pokes the ball around the wall onto a Swedish player who was actually sitting in the wall. He peels off and smashes it home. So you see a lot of some of the best set
pieces.
That.
Yeah.
And this one, he actually, the stutter step you're talking about, I think it was definitely planned in the same way that a penalty kick is. It throws the timing of the whole entire defense off, whipped in and just flicked into the corner. A terrific goal from Varane and massive coming right before the half.
Yeah, it was huge. I think shortly after that, Uruguay had a similar opportunity. I think a header went in and Lloris made a diving save. Yeah. And Godin was crashing at the far post. I honestly think he should have done so much. He should have scored on this rebound. And he just booted it, straight up.
He looked like a defender.
Yeah, he looked like a defender.
He did.
In front of goal, not knowing what to do. And Dr. Pete commented at the time that was their chance, I think, to win. And when that shot presents itself and you're already missing one of your top attacking talents, you don't take that opportunity, I don't think things are going to go well for you.
I think that was a big part of the letdown right before half. You score that, the game's completely different, but it just went to the theme of Uruguay in the entire match. They just seemed muted. You know, they just seemed like they were down a little bit, missing Cavani. So
yeah.
they go down 1-0 right before the half, and they make a substitute in the 59th minute, a double sub, as Christian Rodriguez and Maximilian Gomez come on. But it really didn't make a huge difference in this one, as France is pretty comfortable with Pogba and Kante just denying everything in the midfield.
Kante was just sweeping up everything. I mean, and that's his game. And without kind of the top class attacking midfielder or midfielders in general on the Uruguayan side, they were, Stuani and Suarez were just too isolated, and there was no kind of flow to Uruguay's game at all.
Yeah, their defense is good enough that they held Mbappe in check, which is impressive. But in the 61st minute, Griezmann gets a little half chance from about 25 yards out or so, maybe a little closer. Belts a ball in frame right at the keeper, and it just dips under his hands the last minute, and Muslera just basically volleys the ball in. Just a horrible letdown in such a big match. And you knew Uruguay had no chance to come back from 2-0. It was very disappointing from a neutral standpoint to see that, especially since Muslera has been so good in this tournament.
He had been really good, and this was a really uncharacteristic mistake from him. And I actually read a story where in the couple days that preceded the France-Uruguay game, he lost his uncle in a car accident, so that was Saturday, and then his grandmother passed away on Monday. So obviously, you know, dealing with a lot of personal loss there, you don't know what's going through his head. I mean, he still put in a good performance, but that mistake maybe he was a little bit of stress playing on his mind there.
Yeah, very unfortunate in this one. And like I said, it took the air out of the game a little bit. 2-0 France as they see the rest of the match out pretty comfortably. And this Uruguay team, which has a lot of terrific players, Godin especially, Suarez and Cavani. I think Cavani is 30, Suarez is 32, Godin I think is 33. I don't know if we'll see them again. The good news is that I thought a lot of their other kind of peripheral players, Torreira was excellent, Jimenez, the Atletico Madrid center back, he was very good. Laxalt had a really nice tournament in this one too. So maybe there is some hope there, but they're in CONMEBOL, so I mean, you got to be ready.
They definitely have some rebuilding ahead of them. They're going to be losing a lot of players for the next World Cup cycle, no doubt.
Or not. Or these guys just keep playing. You know, that could. No, I'm serious. Like it could be a situation where you have Suarez at 35, 36 years old playing, and Cavani as well at 34, 35. You could see that. I don't think Godin would play again. I think 37. I think he'll be 36, 37. That's pretty old.
Yeah, and they can call Forlan out of retirement too, and put him up there. I mean, Suarez. You know, I think Cavani probably could go, maybe make the next one. Suarez was hands on his knees sucking in air, 35 minutes in this game, so. I'm not sure how his fitness is going to hold up in these later years, but we'll see. We'll see.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what happens with them for sure. But France moves on here. They will play Belgium. So we are going to preview Belgium and France here, and pretty close to call, but France, slight favorite here, and probably just because they have more big game experience, I guess. I mean, I don't know how you tell these two apart.
I think France are definitely the more fashionable pick. I mean, they've got the star appeal. They've got Pogba. They've got marketable players. It definitely is going to be close, and I think the odds probably reflect that. I don't know what the odds are off the top of my head, but I'm sure they're not favored by a huge stretch. Either one of these teams obviously could win this game, so I think this is going to be amazing. This is the match that I didn't know that I wanted to have happen, but now I couldn't live without it.
I agree, and especially since Belgium is one of the teams that could be a new winner. And I will root for them, if only for that reason.
I mean, a lot of these Belgium players have French roots. I mean, they share a border. The Flemish population in Belgium, it's there's a lot of country rivalry going on in this game. It's going to be really interesting.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting, too, that they were talking about Romelu Lukaku taking a press interview before the match in four different languages and not needing a translator. And I think that's more common in Belgium than people were really saying. I think a lot of those players, because it shares borders, I think a lot of those players speak multiple languages. And honestly, once you get out of England, it's probably pretty common across the board.
Yeah, I think having a second language is, obviously a second, third, fourth language. That's a little exceptional, but I think a lot of these Central European companies have a lot of stuff going on.
They absolutely do. So we're going to move on to the biggest match, James, or just the most important match to us. We're going to bring in Dr. Pete. Dr. Pete, England 2, Sweden 0.
Unbelievable, Thomas. And for once, as English fans, newly minted English fans, we were not sweating during this match because they cruised in this one, start to finish.
They did. I do like that a new nickname came out of this one. Did you guys see Harry Maguire's nickname? James, I know you did.
I saw someone call it a slab.
Slab head.
Yeah. It's got a big head.
His head is gigantic. It's like an Easter Island statue, surfing on the waves, man. It was amazing. Yeah. But, England 2, Sweden 0, and pretty comfortable in this one. I saw a couple articles online talking after the first half about England sitting too deep and playing like an ugly brand of counterattacking football. I was like, were they watching Sweden? I thought Sweden's attack was miserable.
I don't know who went into this tournament thinking, yeah, we'd rather have Berg up top instead of Zlatan. We'll leave him home.
That's why, honestly, I think that's a huge part of why they're going home. Whether or not Zlatan would have made a difference in a game against England is another question. But Dr. Pete, I mean, he's a guy with limited movement at this point in his career at the age of 36, but he can make something out of nothing, and they didn't have that.
Absolutely. I think he would have been huge in this one. You know, Sweden had success. They got to the quarterfinals, but they ran out of gas in this one, and the talent gap was obvious. And when they went down, if they had someone like Zlatan to bring on instead of Berg, who has the most shots without a goal in the tournament.
Well, the Frank Lampard Award.
Then they would have a shot at being in the semifinals. But, you know, they are one of those Cinderella teams that really did not have enough talent to get them any further. And England, credit to them, disposed of them in this game.
Yeah, James, anything else you want to say about Harry Maguire in this one? I think throughout the tournament, he's been hit or miss, but the one thing he hasn't been missing is head balls. He's been hitting them. Whether or not they go where they're supposed to go is another question, but he's been winning a ton of head balls. Do you think that he's actually worked his way into a conversation with like a Chelsea or Manchester United? Maybe, I hope not, but...
I think he could definitely be on a better team than Leicester. But yeah, he has won 33 aerial duels, which is more than any other defender at the World Cup. So I think overall his general play, you're right, has been up and down a little bit. Sometimes his passing has let him down. But if the ball is anywhere near his head...
His slab head.
Yeah, his slab head, sorry.
What is slab head?
It's just a big old back patio made out of concrete. Just sat there on top of his eyebrows.
Do you know where it came from? I looked it up. It was Jamie Vardy in a press conference, and he was speaking to the press officer. He said, "Hi, this is Jamie Vardy from Vardy News. I'd like to know what the diameter is of Harry Maguire's head."
He was drunk off vodka gummy bears when he made that one.
Oh, that's fantastic. Good. That's fantastic. But honestly, in this one, if you're an English fan and you've suffered for so long in so many matches that you should win and you don't win them, to have a team show up the way these guys did today, I mean, even the only thing the press has been writing about, the negativity they could find, was Raheem Sterling, which for me in the first half was a little bit justified because he missed a goal. But his off-the-ball movement was stellar, which is why he wasn't taken off.
His off-the-ball movement this entire tournament has been amazing, and it enables so much of what England does. A lot of times you saw in this game Harry Kane dropping back a little bit deeper in the midfield and dragging defenders with him. And Sterling is making that, and Sterling's making that run in. You know, I don't think anyone else is making that. No one else on the England team is making that run. No one else is getting on the end of those passes because you need that speed to get on the end of them. Now, his final ball has been a little unfortunate, and I think he can definitely improve there. But in terms of what he's doing for the team, it has been fantastic.
Yeah, I would agree with you. And I think it's ridiculous people calling for Rashford to start based on his play. Because in this game, to get in behind the defense on that ball over the top, Rashford's not going to do that. Kane's not going to do that. Sterling's the only one on the team who can make that run and get in behind the defense. And taking him off would be a mistake to me. Obviously, his finishing let him down in this one, and we'd probably be having a different conversation if they lost by one, but they didn't, partly because, you know, he's doing a lot of the dirty work up there. He's dragging defenders around off the ball, and I guarantee you, if I'm a defender on Sweden, I'm happy if Sterling goes off.
Yeah, you get to take a breather.
I mean,
he did go off in the 91st minute, but by then they were already gassed.
Yeah, I actually thought he had a decent game. And to me, it's just the fact that England has been playing well and getting results, that there's nothing else to talk about. And they need something negative, or at least partially negative, to fixate on, because they don't know how to function otherwise.
The English media needs something to sabotage their own team's chances at winning a World Cup.
Mm-hmm.
There wouldn't be any other way to do it.
Yeah, and you have to say in this one, you had a couple guys like Dele Alli, who hasn't played especially well in the tournament, but has done enough. He scores in the 59th minute on a ball bent in by Lingard, who's played okay in the tournament as well, but was kind of, people are starting to grumble about him too. It seems like they kind of tied a knot on a lot of those players. Maguire as well. I mean, he was winning head balls, but he lost a couple balls in possession against Tunisia, and his head balls were a little bit ineffective in a few of the other matches, and all of a sudden they were trying, James. They were trying so hard to come up with a story that could sink this team. They could not find one in the end. Dele Alli's goal in the 59th minute effectively put the match to bed, and I thought it was really telling, guys, when the Sweden double sub was made, their best player, Forsberg, Emil Forsberg, was taken off. And you have to say there that they just didn't have anybody to bring off the bench. It was like when Germany was losing and we were all screaming at the screen that Leroy Sané should be coming in. It's like that's when Zlatan should have been coming in, Pete.
Yeah, Sweden's starting unit did a terrific job. They punched above their weight. but there's just no quality in their subs, and if they go down 2-0, they're toast. I mean, it's just, they're just not built to come back from that, and that's what happened in this one. You knew sooner or later they were going to run into a team like this, but I mean, you have to give England credit. Winning a quarterfinal, even against an inferior opponent, is not an easy thing to do, and to make it look easy is even more difficult. One thing about Dele Alli, real quick, this is classic Dele Alli in, number one, the sense that he disappears and intermittently has poor games, but he can show up and have, and he had quite a few huge goals for Tottenham this year in big games. And number two, it's that ghost run to the back post that he's so good at, mm-hmm. and the defenders lose track of him, and he did that in this one. I don't think he had another shot on goal, so this was his only chance, and he finished it just superb. So I think you've got a lot of guys on England's team now who are going to be coming in with an incredible amount of confidence, and so to me, this is their chance, not this crap about waiting 4 years because they're going to be more experienced. No, this is their chance. Mm-mm.
This is their chance. I completely agree. Pickford also had a nice save in this one. Punches the ball over the net. But let's talk about how each England player, in my opinion, in their starting lineup, between Pickford, Maguire, Stones, and Walker, all of them have had a moment in this tournament where you could say they played terrifically, honestly, a game where they played really, really well. Walker gets over his allowing a penalty in the first match without really a problem. Henderson has played really well in this tournament. Even Dyer coming off the bench with his PK goal to break the curse. Lingard gets a goal and an assist. Dele Alli scores in this one. Trippier has been maybe the best player this side of Harry Kane, and maybe you could argue that he's been even better. Ashley Young has had some up-and-down matches, but his delivery was exceptional and has been exceptional off of dead balls. And we've already discussed Sterling, and the only thing left to discuss, James, is Harry Kane and exactly what you were talking about before, how he's playing a different role for a different team, where he dropped back in this one and became like a false nine.
What I see with this team is that they're playing just with a freedom, like they're enjoying the game, they're having fun, and they don't have this massive burden of expectation on them, which would cause them all to make mistakes or what have you. They're bouncing back immediately when they do make a mistake, and they're coming out there and playing for each other, and it's something that I don't know that I've ever seen from an English national team.
Yeah, real selflessness going throughout the team. I don't really want to hint at it because I do know a negative story that could come out of all this. I mean, obviously they're playing with house money at this point, but just real quick, how bad do you guys think the next World Cup for England is going to be, the expectations?
Yeah, especially if they get knocked out in like the semifinals. Because if they win the World Cup, I mean, who cares how they do in the next World Cup, to be honest.
Yeah, that's right.
But that's, if they get knocked out in the semifinals, and they will be favored in this Croatia match, Vegas odds, I'm sure. But it's going to be an even match, obviously. But the other thing that I saw, they've been playing really smart. They had 3 starters on yellow cards in this match, and all of them are critical players for them, and none of them ended up with a second yellow card, which is huge. You have all your players going into the semifinal, and I love the new FIFA rule that you can't miss a final based on cumulative yellow cards. I mean, how many World Cup finals are there, 1 or 2 guys where it could be the team's best player and they're missing out on the World Cup final? It was always a travesty.
Yeah, Balak, yeah. He missed out on the World Cup final.
So
yeah.
That, I think FIFA did something right for once.
That's interesting. I didn't know that they had done that, but that, yeah. I agree. That's the right move.
They reset at the semifinals stage, which is pretty awesome. I mean, if you get sent off, you could still miss it, but you don't get sent off in a semifinal. But yeah, so England here, 2-0 over Sweden. Maguire and Dele Alli with the goals, and it was fun watching all the live feeds from the pubs and stuff like that, and listening to all the radio commentators talking about it. The old guard, Rio Ferdinand, Alan Shearer guys, who are usually just there to pretty much crap on the national team. Those guys coming around and just be like, this is fantastic. No longer saying, well, in my day, we used to do this. Like, we don't have to hear that crap anymore. We don't have to hear that crap anymore because this team has passed them, and I don't think it's that close.
Yeah, I agree with you. And if you want to see something funny, Google Joe Hart, starting English goalkeeper, and basically in March of 2018, a couple of months ago, most of the pundits were saying that Joe Hart should start in goal.
That's crazy. That is crazy.
James knows better.
Oh.
Hey,
and I'm not. And I'm not even a fan of the English national team, and I think that would be just a shame if that had happened.
David Seaman.
I will say that Pickford.
That's what he said.
I will say that Pickford in this one, I think that he's a guy who leaves this tournament with a ton of confidence, and whether or not this team gets sunk by whatever they do, it's not important right now. All that matters right now is they're going into the semifinals to play against Croatia, because Croatia beat Russia in an awesome match here as they win in penalties, but it went back and forth much better than I was expecting, Pete.
Yeah, and if you want to see a guy have the greatest moment of his life followed 5 minutes by the worst moment of his life, just tune in to minute 115 in this game when Fernandez for Russia, and just unbelievably heartbreaking for the guy to drag his penalty kick wide of the post, which sealed their fate after smashing in a header in the 115th minute, and did my favorite celebration, which is leap over the barricade and just go running towards the fans and screaming your head off.
I don't even blame him, though. I blame Smoloff, who went first and tried to do the old chip it up the middle.
Oh, that was bad. Poorly executed.
If he had just chipped over the middle, he would have done it right. But he dragged it to the left, right to where the goalie had already laying on the ground, and he just swatted it away. Couldn't believe that.
That was the worst PK of the tournament so far. That was on goal.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, and it was surprising considering how good the penalty kicks have been in this World Cup for the shootouts. Maybe I'm just thinking of the England match where they had a lot of really good penalty kicks. But yeah, some pretty weak ones in this one. Let's start at the beginning, though. Coming into this match, Russia as the host, obviously just ecstatic to be there. Croatia playing a very efficient and industrious style led by Modric and Rakitic in their midfield. Mandzukic running all over the place. This team looks really, really cohesive, which is impressive, all things considered, with Croatia. That being said, against the run of play, Sherevzhov of Russia hits a banger, just a bent ball into the upper 90s, and all of a sudden Russia's leading 1-0 in the 31st minute.
Yeah, that was an amazing shot by Cheryshev, dialed up by our big friend Dzyuba, who played link man, receiving a pass with his back to goal and then laying it off for Cheryshev. Dzyuba had a good link-up play there, but Cheryshev still had a lot to do. Put it onto his left foot and just smashed it into the upper 90.
Sent the crowd
Oh, yeah. The keeper just stood and watched it fly into the back of the net. It was an amazing shot.
Yeah, and all of a sudden, you know, the crowd's into it. It was already a home match, and you had to think that at that point, Russia's got to be favored to go through in a match as tightly contested as this.
Yeah, I don't know about being favored to go through, but at that point, you're thinking, okay, they got a real shot in this match. No question about it. And Cheryshev had a heck of a tournament. You know, it's kind of sad to see him and Dzyuba, two guys I've never seen play soccer before, really had an incredible tournament. So hats off to them. Dzyuba was just an absolute beast. He was such a handful for the defenders. I don't think anybody would have been happy about facing him in the semifinals.
Yeah, it was not to be, though, as the game gets drawn in the 39th minute by Kramaric, bent in from Mandzukic. Great finish here, too, James.
Yeah, Mandzukic, I always find interesting how they have him playing out wide. He's always making runs out to the left. Mm-hmm. And he's just, because he's such a tall, lanky dude. And he's not particularly fast. But once he gets going, he actually made a few defenders miss. And he puts a great ball across that Kramaric heads in across goal to the far post.
Clinical.
That was a great finish. It was a great ball in. Everything about the goal was well worked.
I thought it was poor defending, though. A very nice finish, not to take away from him. But there's five guys in the box forming a perfect circle around the one dude that they're supposed to be marking. So it was really bad defending. Beautiful cross, nice header. But, I mean, play some defense.
You've been complaining about the defense for a majority of this tournament. You are not happy with the defenders in this.
No, overall, it's been fun to watch and it's created a lot of drama, but just awful awful defending. And we haven't even talked about on set pieces all the zone marking. And we can get to the next goal because that's exactly how Russia scored the equalizer.
So the match moves forward. It's drawn at full time, 1-1. The big fella's off. Zuba's off. Kovacic is on for Croatia. Russia, you had to wonder why they took Zuba off because he seemed to be effective. I guess he just ran out of gas. I mean, there's a lot of games these guys are playing, but it goes into overtime, and there is a goal scored on a set piece, Dr. Pete. Vida scores. Weird-looking dude, but a great finish. I guess you have to say that the defenders have to do a little better, huh?
Vida, not the most beautiful man in the tournament, but beautiful head ball for him. I just thought that the Russian defense, again, struggled on marking and don't have too much else to say about that one.
I honestly think that Akinfeev could have done better. I mean, I guess he was wrong-footed.
It's like slow motion.
Yeah, and he just watched it, and then it kind of like hit the inside of the post, and he's like, oh, I'm going to go after it now. Oh, wait, it's already in the goal because I just watched it dribble across the line. And the defenders, too. Everyone just seemed frozen in place, I think. It just must have just wrong-footed everybody.
I mean, a downward header will do that sometimes. It throws timing off. But I was surprised that there wasn't any kind of reaction from any of them. Also, that there was nobody on the post. I don't know if he came off the post, but there's no reason.
That's the new fad.
Idiotic fad. Like,
it's the new fad.
It's like zonal marking.
What's cooler than giving up a ball that football nicks off the post going 5 miles an hour?
Nothing is cooler.
Nothing is cool about that. Put somebody on the post. Like, it drives me crazy, man. So the ball rolls into the net. I still think it was a good header by Vida. I don't blame it on Akinfeev so much. It was a ball that was headed down, but I do think there needs to be somebody on that post. Still, Russia comes back in the 115th minute, and Fernandez scores. This has to be the first Fernandez to ever play for a Russian team.
And it will also be the last.
And also the last. I heard that in some Russian reports, they actually change his name a little bit to make it more Russian.
I don't even know how you would begin to do that. His name is Mario Figuera Fernandez. So if you can do that, I would be impressed.
He does have citizenship in Russia. He scores here. Brazilian playing in Russia gets the big goals. 2-2 in 115th minute, and then the penalties start, and they start poorly, James.
Yeah, Smolov walks up, looks like he's full of confidence, you know, focused, eyes on the prize, walks up, hits a dinky little chip left of center of the goal right into Subasic's palm, and he just slaps it away. Happy as a kid who just found a lollipop.
It was bad. That was really bad. We won't go over every single penalty kick here, but Kovacic misses. Fernandez, as Pete alluded to earlier, he misses. Modric steps up, scores his, and honestly, from there on out, it was always going to be Croatia. Everybody else scores, but Rakitic with the big one as a fifth shooter. Great drama if you're watching as a neutral, but Croatia moves on to play against England. And if you guys were to warn England about something in this match, what would it be? I'll start with you, Dr. Pete.
I would say that the warning is really you've got to find a way to shut down Croatia's midfield. I didn't think they played particularly well in this one, but again, they found a way to get through, and that's all that matters. And I really think that England is going to struggle to shut down this midfield, so it's going to be a great game. Really looking forward to it. I'm going to have to shuffle around some surgeries, but I'm happy that it starts at 2 p.m. Eastern Standard Time rather than the stupid 10 a.m. games that are very difficult to watch.
I think if England leaves it to Henderson to patrol this midfield against Rakitic and Modric, that they're going to be under a lot of pressure. Looking at who they have in midfield ahead of Henderson, it's Lingard, Ali, and then depending on what the formation is, Ashley Young and Trippier and Sterling, wherever they happen to be playing. But none of those are really defensive players.
No, not at all.
And I think if Croatia play their cards right, and they've got, I'm sure they're going to be focusing on this because it's the strongest part of their team. If Rakitic and Modric connect and they're able to just ping outlet passes the entire game, England are going to be in for a sore ride.
Yeah, that's exactly the point I would make as well. Henderson versus Rakitic and Modric is a little bit scary for me. I think that you should see a change. I mean, we talked before about all the England players being confident and playing well throughout this tournament, but we're talking about a tactical situation here where you could lose a lot of battles in the midfield. Lingard runs a lot, but is not a good, he's not great in defense positionally. And Dele Alli is much more of an attacking forward than he is of any kind of central midfielder. So I worry about that mismatch. I mean, on the other side of that coin, if Mandzukic doesn't play in this one, you could have a field day from Trippier or Ashley Young playing on the wings. So it could be your strength in the center midfield versus our strength out wide, whipping balls into Harry Kane. So if it matches up like that and is less of a cagey match, I mean, that's better for the neutral, right?
Yeah, that's a great point.
Pete, anything else you want to add to Croatia versus England?
I just want to say that I spent the 4th of July weekend, our Independence Day, rooting furiously for England. So
yeah, that is terrible. I don't know why you guys. I mean, what, you guys have like Stockholm syndrome.
You know,
it wasn't. I don't know what it is.
It wasn't on July 4th itself. I mean, we kicked their ass a couple hundred years ago. We can be friends now. It's fine.
Yeah, I'm fine with it too. Just following the Prem, and with you being a Tottenham fan, I think that you can understand it with Harry Kane, Dele Alli, Dyer, etc.
There's going to be a Tottenham man taking home the World Cup, Tom, as long as Croatia gets knocked out. How about that?
I mean, even if they didn't get knocked out, you have Luka Modric, former Tottenham guy. Just saying.
It's true.
So we will see what happens going forward in this one. It has been a tremendous World Cup. I really don't like the fact that they're on a Tuesday and a Wednesday, but what are you going to do for the semifinal matches? We will then have the third place match on Saturday, which, guys, is usually a pretty interesting affair, usually a lot of goals scored, and then the final. We will preview those after these semifinal matches. And, I mean, for me, I'm happy with own goal. I think he's had a really good performance, but I don't want to see him anymore in this one.
I think he's got some life left in him. He's got legs yet. I think he gets a few more goals before this tournament's over.
He's played a lot of matches. Extra time.
Almost as many minutes as that 39-year-old Russian defender. They need to... can we make sure that they're being tested? Is all I'm saying.
Stop it. I did want to add one more thing. Did you guys see the defender for Uruguay just sobbing with 5 minutes left in the match?
He should be banned for up to three matches for starting his tears 5 minutes before the game's over. I mean, teams have scored two goals in 5 minutes. Am I wrong? And Manchester on the field, like, not just like one tear, crocodile tear in his eye. I mean, he's sobbing. Running back for a goal kick.
Ugly crying. Yeah.
What are you ugly, doing,
like,
dude?
Sobs racking his body.
Like, he just got broken up with via text, just, like, sobbing backwards. Oh, it's just painful. Painful to watch. But let's hope that there's no red cards and no own goals. I mean, the whole thing has been phenomenal. Russia has been a very good host, you have to say, at least from what we've heard about. You don't know how much of that's being muted, but it seems like everything's going well over there. And we're just looking forward to the semifinals. I'm going to have the worst World Cup withdrawal when this is over, by the way. The worst World Cup withdrawal. All right, for James Lewis and Dr. Pete, I am Tom Miller saying I hope everybody has an awesome week.